Bo. The centerpiece of Parshat Bo is Parshat HaChodesh. You have Parshat HaChodesh in front of you on page one, both in Hebrew and English. And we run into this problem all the time in studying Torah, but we run into this problem especially the more well-known a Parsha is, we run into this logjam, which is we don't fully appreciate its impact on the original audience because we know it so well. And we're the omniscient reader stepping aside, so we know that B'nai Yisrael is about to leave Egypt and be redeemed and never come back and all of that. And therefore, we kind of assume that everybody else knows it. I mean, if we know it and we're all this way later, 3,000 plus years later, certainly they knew it. But we got to keep in mind, what did they actually know? And the reason that's critical is because this Korban Pesach is presented here originally as a one-shot deal. It's a one-off. You do it this year, and that's it. And towards the end of that presentation, we're then told that you're going to be celebrating this holiday as a commemorative thing later on, but we're not told about the Korban Pesach being part of that. So it seems the Korban Pesach is a one-shot deal. And so how do the people perceive what this is about and what it means, what it's supposed to affect, how they're supposed to understand what's the symbolism, why particular details. And so I'd like to look at it through their eyes because that will also perhaps help explain the following. You take a look on page one and you see, I could, but it would be tiny print, to recreate the entire passage. The Perek Yud Bet is very long and it's Perek Yud Bet plus the beginning of Perek Yud Gimel is all kind of one, not flow, it's one zigzag. Because here you have the 20 psukim of Parshat HaChodesh in front of you, and it's details about law. It's really the first halachic parsha in the Torah. And that's the famous Rashi that the Torah should have started here. You turn the page, and on top I have a note that following that, there are several narrative pieces. The narrative piece about Makat Becharot, the narrative piece about Bnei Yisrael leaving, meaning moving out from Ramses to Sukkot. And then there's another legal section, which is another repetition, or another piece, a repetition, about the laws of Korban Pesach. But here there's something put in, which is Lidorotechem. And suddenly we find out, although there was a little hint to this in one of the narrative passages, that we were going to be doing this in future generations, but here it's full on. So part of the question is, why isn't that given earlier? Why isn't that part of the earlier piece? Also, what's the value added here? What piece is added in here that wasn't there before? So I'd kind of like to look at that, look at the flow of the things here through the eyes of Bnei Yisrael and how they're hearing things. Now, what is it that Bnei Yisrael know about Korbanot? The answer is we have no idea. It could be that they are very familiar with animal sacrifices and other sort of ritual things they've seen in Egypt. It could be that they have their own sacrifices they bring that we don't know about. We don't have a clue. But one thing that we do know is that there is a very famous story that I'm willing to bet the people were familiar with, even in general terms, that's part of the national history and national tradition that involves the Korban. So I want you to picture, here you are, Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim. You've been watching the Egyptians get smacked around really badly. Very likely, the servitude may have stopped. Certainly, the harshness of the servitude stopped. You may be kind of in a waiting pattern to see how things are going to play out. You may still be doing work. We don't know. But Moshe has told Paro, Makat Becharot is coming. We don't know if they know it's coming. So let's read through this parsha quickly and get a sense of how the Bnei Yisrael would be hearing this and what it would mean to them. Now, by the way, Moshe and Aaron are not told to pass that on to Bnei Yisrael. That seems to be for the leadership. You know that this is the first month. This is what you got to tell them. So on the 10th of this month, everybody should take in a lamb into the house, a lamb or goat. So if your household is too small, then you join with another family. Okay. Now, as far as we're concerned, and as far as they're concerned, that could be what the norm is. Maybe they would only use male animals. Maybe they only use young animals, yearlings. Maybe animals have to be without blemish. We're going to find out later, of course, that that's part of our legal system. Could be that they're used to that. Now, you're going to hold it in your house for 4 days. Now, that's the first thing that you hear that strikes you as a little weird, which is everybody shechts it. How can everybody shecht it? Now, the truth is, we understand it's distributive. It means you got one, and you got one, and you got one, and everybody's going to shecht their one, and yet the language is a little bit funny. It should have been v'shachatu otam, or v'shachat oto. But there's the plural and the singular mixed together. Little hint of something a little strange going on. We'll get back to it. All right, so what are they supposed to do? Supposed to take the dam and put it on the doorposts and on the house. Now, at this point, I would stop and say, okay, if they're familiar from either from Egyptian practices or from what they've heard about Canaanite practices or what they may even have knowledge of basic Torah rules, maybe, that when you bring a korban, you have to put the dam on the mizbeach. There's no mizbeach. It's a household, so we'll use the doors. That's a substitute. Very good. Maybe. But then you get this, a little bit later about the dam. Interesting thing. You have to eat it with matzan maror. You have to eat it, and you have to eat it with matzan maror. This is new information. Got to figure out what that's about. It can't be raw, it can't be cooked, it has to be roasted in the fire. And it has to be entire. The whole thing has to be there, roasted in the fire. Now there's a lot of powerful symbolism that's coming across here. And again, we don't know what they're contrasting it with. We don't know what they're familiar with. Maybe all offerings that they've seen are the entire animal. Or maybe in their offerings the animal's cut up and therefore to be different than we don't know. But taken as a blank, and all we know of is what we actually have in the Torah, we have to wonder what this is about. By the way, this is the one. What's the one korban that they would have in national history that would be of great significance to them? The one that they would know. Oh yes, that happened centuries ago in our family, and it was of great significance. Akedat Yitzchak. And what kind of korban was Akedat Yitzchak? It was an olah, all burned up. So this seems to be saying, well, you're going to sort of start it the same way, and you're going to end it the opposite way, which is to eat it all up. And like, you got to eat it up all up so much that if your family is too small to eat it up, you have to join with another family, right? You can't leave anything over till the morning, which means you got to eat it up all at night. You can't leave it over the morning. There's the fire again. Fire, fire, fire. And how are you supposed to eat it? Sitting on your suitcases, basically. So you eat it hastily because it's a Pesach. Well, what does that mean? Those two things don't fit. Eat it hastily because it's a Pesach. And if you take Pesach the way that we traditionally understand the word, which means passing over, that means you're going to stay in your houses and you may not leave because outside is dangerous, as we're going to hear in a moment, which means why sit in suitcases? It makes sense. Vavarti v'eretzitzayim b'layla hazeh. This is the news that they maybe didn't know. I'm going to pass through tonight. V'keti kol b'chor v'eretzitzayim yadam v'yad b'ma. I'm going to smite every firstborn, animal, people. V'chol v'eretzitzayim maseh shvatim ani adun. I'm going to attack all of the gods of Egypt. Now that blood that you're putting on the door, which up till now we may have thought was standing in lieu of the Mizbeach, is suddenly going to be a sign. There's that Pesach. I'm going to see the dam and I will Pasach over you, which could mean pass over you, or perhaps I will protect you. I'll hover over you, protect you. And you won't have any damage happen because the dam will be on the door. All right, now I'm trying to figure out, what is this offering about? All right. From here to the end, there are several formulations of this holiday being a permanent holiday. Holiday, but not mention of the Korban. The Isur of Chametz, the Mitzvah of Matzah. Later on we find out about Haggadah. But these things are brought in here as a permanent in the future, Bar Rishon, Bar Basa, in the first month, on the 14th, and you can't own chametz, and you can't own chametz, and you mastik matzah. But there again, there's nothing about the Korban Pesach, and it's a little bit difficult to figure out what is going on here. You are a member of Bnei Israel. You hear these commands. What do you do with them? How do you understand these commands? So let's go back to the very first Korban, and the only one that we know of, well, we assume that they had familiarity which is the Olah, which was in place of Yitzchak. Akedat Yitzchak, right? That's in place of Yitzchak. As far as they know, taking that picture, what do they know about a Korban? What is a Korban? A Korban is a stand-in. I'm supposed to die, but I got a break. And I've got an animal that gets to stand in for me and dies in its place. By the way, that's not crazy. That's the Ramban. The famous Ramban at the beginning of Vayikra, where he quotes the Rambam's thing about Korbanot, and he rips it apart. He's very upset at it. And he says, a Korban really is an act of chesed. You should be on the Mizbeach. You have to picture yourself as if you're on the Mizbeach. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu did a chesed, allowed you to put the animal, that's why you do smichah with all of your energy. You kind of transfer your energy to the animal, and the whole symbolism of it. If that's the case, then what are Bnei Israel told they were going to do a Korban? And how might they interpret the Korban? This Korban is a Korban in lieu. In lieu of what? Well, let's remember, what does he say after he gives all the laws of this Korban? What am I going to do that night? I'm going to come through Mitzrayim. And I'm going to kill every Bechor. It doesn't say every Egyptian Bechor. I'm going to kill every Bechor. So who's on the hot seat? Our Bechorot are on the hot seat. And I'm going to ramp it up a little bit further. Maybe we're all on the hot seat, because what was the first thing that Hashem told Moshe to tell Paro? Three big words. Bini, Bechori, Yisrael. Yisrael's my Bechor, which means all of them Yisrael is under threat. So all of them Yisrael is under threat. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to come through and wipe out all the Bechorot. And so therefore, this Korban becomes becomes like a protection. It becomes an in lieu. And then the doors play a different role. The doors are not the Mizbeach, the doors are the marker. It says, okay, here we've got a Korban, this is a safe house. All right, we've Ki'ilu already slaughtered our Bechor. There's the dam. Okay? And notice, the phrasing here is Vayah Adam Lachem La'ot. What does Lachem La'ot mean? Machem La'ot. What does that mean? So the literal translation, it's a sign for you. So a sign for you, we understand, by the way, where did they put the dam? On the inside or the outside? They put it on the inside. On the inside, lachem la'ot, just like tefillin, lachem la'ot. And yet, lachem la'ot may be, with not much stretching, interpreted as a sign on your behalf. It's like, this is your sign. Okay, this is our dam. We're good. Okay, go to the next house. Right? And so they could easily, and they have reason to interpret it that way. That's piece one. But there's another component to what they're hearing here, which would give the Korban, and not only in place of it, it would give it extra texture. It would give it another memad here, another dimension. Notice that there is an emphasis in the halachot here about fire. It has to be tzli'esh. And tzli'esh is mentioned twice. And then you're not allowed to leave anything over, and what happens if you leave it over, you have to burn it pa'esh. There's a real emphasis on fire here. Now, fire represents a whole lot of things, but explicitly in the Torah, both in Sefer Devarim, and in Sefer Melachim, and in Sefer Yirmiyahu, Mitzrayim is called a Kor HaBarzel. It's called an iron furnace, like a crucible, that you were formed in. So in other words, we've experienced the fire. Now, whether Bnei Israel saw it that way, but they have been living through two generations of terrible servitude and harsh servitude, so they very likely did understand it. And now it's like a culmination with fire. How do I know it's a culmination? Well, there's several symbolic acts you're supposed to do here which seem to state that we're done. Now, it could be that, again, that servitude is over. It could be that at least they're on hiatus while Mitzrayim, you know, recovers. Could be not. What are the statements that they're done? Well, one statement that they're done is sit on your suitcases. Another statement that they've done is that you're supposed to eat it with matzah and maror. Why matzah and maror? So the simplest explanation is because, remember, we're not, this is a couple weeks in advance. So you can hardly say, well, they have to eat with matzah because there won't be time for stuff to rise. Make it now. You got 2 weeks for it to rise. It'll be moldy by then. Ela matzah, the Ibn Ezra explains, the matzah was the food that the Mitzrim fed us as slaves, which is Nahagadah, Halach Ma'anya. And Maror, of course, is very Maruot Chayehem. So what am I telling you to do with this Korban Pesach? Eat the experience. As in other words, you now have control over the experience. The experience of the bitterness and the slavery is over. And so they could understand it that way, given these particular halachot, which means you can understand it as a korban in lieu of. It could be as the korban of fire. You can see it as both, because truth is both elements are there. And that's really all that exists at this point. And then we have the narrative. Makat Bechorot, they travel, they get to Sukkot, they're on the first stop, and then they get these halachot that suddenly tell them there's going to be Korban Pesach in the future, and the Dorot Techem, and you're supposed to do the Korban Pesach, and listen to the words and tell me which biblical character comes to mind. Who are you going to hear when you hear these words? You have the English on the left. Now, call Eved Ish Miknat Kasef is already a little bit of a giveaway. That's a notish beruvo. And that's a halachad, machalim, ledorot, that you can't break a bone of the Pesach, it has to be entire, it has to be complete. However, call Adat Yisrael Yasuoto v'chiagurit chager. It's not word ger. And this is the first time that that mention of a ger shows up, which in Bamidbar is all over the place. V'lager, agar, betocham, etc. V'asafesach adonai himo lo kol zachar. V'azikrav la'asoto v'yakez v'acharetz v'chol arel lo yochabo. Torachet li'yel lager, lazrach, lager, agar, betochem. Who immediately comes to mind when you hear these words? I don't know about you, but I hear Avraham being screamed all over the place. Miknat Kesef first shows up in the context of Avraham in Perek Yud Zayin of Bereishit, when Hashem gives him the command of Brit Milah and says to him that if you have an Ish Miknat Kesef, you have to do Brit Milah on him. Right? So, and if somebody's born in the house or somebody's purchased, an Eved has to Brit Milah. The whole issue of Brit Milah, that's Avraham. The problem with an Arel, that's all Avrahamic stuff. So let's go back to Avraham and see if there's something else going on with this Korban Pesach that we should be thinking of. We talked about the Akedah. But remember, here there's a big thing about fire. Now remember, at this point in the proceedings, there's new information about Israel that they did not know, at least we don't have any reason to think they knew, back when they were in the house that night with all hell breaking loose outside and they're safe inside. At that point, when they were inside the houses, what did they think was going to happen the next morning? That we don't know. They have no reason to think that they're leaving. Basically, it's the next Makkah, and just like smart people kept their animals in the house for Barad, so smart people are putting blood on the doors and protecting themselves, Makkah Pachorot. Okay, it's the granddaddy of Makkot, but it's just another Makkah. No reason to think that anything's happening tomorrow. Suddenly, the next morning, we're told, we're getting out of town. Take your stuff and go. For how long, by the way? 3 days, and then we see what happens with that. But you're leaving. On the way out, at their first stop in Sukkot, Hashem gives Moshe these mitzvot, and suddenly we have mitzvot about the future with all of this Avraham connection. So I know some Avraham stories. I'm in the family. I'm not a stranger. And in the family, I know the story of the Akedah. I also know the story of something else. There's another very, very deep vision and promise that was given to Avraham, my great, 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 great grandfather. Right? However many greats. He was really great. What was the promise? It was called Brit Ben Abatarim. Now, what do Brit Ben HaMetzrayim look like? So keep in mind that the Torah will often draw two things together to contrast them. So you suddenly look at them in relief against each other and you see the difference. What did Brit Ben HaMetzrayim look like? What was Brit Ben HaMetzrayim? How did it start? Hashem said, take those animals and do what with them? Cut them in half. Put them here. And then you're going to stand there. And what stands with Avraham as the breed happens? Tanur Ashan V'Lapid Ish. Fire and smoke. That's the breed. Fire and smoke. That's the breed. And what is the breed? The breed is, it's bottom of the page. Yadoa Tidaki Ger Yezarach. Ger Yezarach. Ger Yeh. That's the word. Your kids are going to be strangers. And they're going to be oppressed. And they're going to be afflicted for a long time. And I'll judge the people. Ooh, I'm starting to see that happen in front of me. They're judged. And you will leave with a lot of wealth. Yeah, we just got some gold and silver from our neighbors. Pretty cool. It's starting to fit in. And suddenly I realize this korban that we just did last night and that we're now told we're going to do every year may be the completion of the circle that was begun with Brit Ben HaMetzrayim. How does it close the circle? Brit Ben HaMetzrayim, what were we told to do? Cut the animals in half. What are we told to do here? Keep the animal whole. You're not allowed to break a bone. Where did Brit Ben HaMetzrayim happen? Outside. This, you have to be inside the house. But similar to Brit Ben HaMetzrayim, there's a strong element of fire that courses through it. Brit Ben HaMetzrayim is all about fire, and fire is all over this korban. And whatever's left over has to be burned. One other component to it is the animal has to be entire. And it has to be all consumed, and you can't leave any behind. And if you leave it behind, it has to be burnt up and destroyed.
What's the significance of fire?
What's going to happen to Bnei Yisrael? They're all going to be gone. None of them can stay behind. And maybe this is a remez to the Agadah that the people who did stay behind are punished. But we leave as a unit. This is not a broken up. So it's as if at Brit Ben HaMetzrayim there's a shattering that goes on. And this is the night that the shattering comes together. And that every year we're told to reenact that conclusion of Brit Ben HaMetzrayim. And as we said numerous times here, Brit Ben HaMetzrayim, as we discover in history, and we say it explicitly in the Haggadah, is not a one-shot deal. It's a historic pattern. We say it, Shiloh Achad Bilvad.
We don't just reenact the conclusion, we start from the beginning. We start in the Haggadah.
Yeah, and?
I'm saying we're not only reenacting the conclusion.
Exactly, because the reality is that that cycle goes throughout history. So either we're celebrating a Pesach because we've again come through that cycle and we've again come home, and Ayin, Ezra, Perek, Gimel, when they, the first thing they do is the Korban Pesach when they return. It's not Ezra himself, he's not alive yet, but when they return, it's recorded there. Or we're doing it to commemorate that cycle. What happens when there really is a separation and we return? The first thing we do is Korban Pesach. What did Chizkiyahu do big gadol after he got rid of the bamot? Korban Pesach. What did Yoshiyahu do after he cleared out the bamot? Korban Pesach. What was the first thing he brought in by Cheney? Korban Pesach. It's the return. And then every year is the commemoration of bringing those shattered pieces together. So here we are, Bnei Yisrael and Mitzrayim, and we're hearing these mitzvot and getting these details and then experiencing it. What do we feel we're experiencing? We're experiencing something of a personal, of a communal, and a historic significance. On a personal level, I should have died, and this is in place. On a communal significance, this is the fire of our experience. We are now controlling our experience. We're now leaving. And on a historic level, this is the culmination of a hundreds year wait to see the conclusion of Brit Ben HaMetzrayim. And of course, what they don't know, but we'll find out over history, is that it's a cycle that is going to repeat and that we're again going to be ger. The ger that's mentioned here, the milah, the arel, all of this are bringing us back to Abraham and connecting us with Brit Ben HaMetzrayim.